Okay, we are now reconvening. I see that some of you want to continue standing. That's okay, of course. But if you want to take your seat, that's also welcome. Okay, so we paused. Our previous agenda item was the appeals mechanism. We had a very fruitful discussion of that, and we will be thinking in more creative ways to advance discussion and make progress for our sessions tomorrow. And now we will continue with the next agenda item, which is the principles. And I believe Becky is already in the line, so I will turn to Becky to begin with the principles agenda item. Becky?
Thank you, Leon. I am going to focus on what I believe is the most substantive issue of disagreement or concern with respect to the mission commitments and core values. As members and participants will recall, we included a very specific provision in the mission statement that said ICANN's mission did not include regulation of services that use the Internet's unique identifiers. Both in response to the first comment period and the second comment period, a number of commentators, including the board, said that it was that expressed concern that the limitation on regulation about the use of services, or the regulation of services, would undermine in some way or in some way jeopardize ICANN's ability to enforce its contractual requirements imposed on registries and registrars. And the group spent quite a lot of time in between the first proposal and the second proposal discussing this, and there was strong consensus that to the extent that, for example, an applicant was affirmatively offering as part of a new GTLD obligation, was committing to undertake certain obligations, even though those obligations were not strictly within ICANN's mission statement, so in the form of commitments or rules about how the GTLD would be used, or public interest commitments, for example, that did not constitute regulation, that would be interpreted under contractual principles. We did not modify the language in the second proposal. A number of people came back and reiterated their concern. A number of other people came back and reiterate and express concern about our discussion in the report regarding the difference between regulation and contracting. So I think we have an important and, I believe, pretty thorny issue here. I think that the current language clearly says that voluntarily negotiate clearly permits ICANN full enforcement of voluntarily committed contractual obligations with registries and registrars. The question becomes when you move out of the sort of voluntary commitment. So let me give an example. In the ICM application 4.xxx, ICM affirmatively said that it would verify every registrant name and address, that it would affirmatively verify those, that it would not permit anyone under 18 to register a domain name in .xx, that it would have, that it would provide certain protections for intellectual property owners that went above and beyond what ICANN required. Those were all voluntary commitments that came in as part of ICM's application and that were reflected in ICM's contract with ICANN, and that I think all of us would say were voluntarily negotiated. They were not a form of regulation. The question is, what if ICANN was to unilaterally impose in a registry or registrar agreement an obligation that registrars engage in affirmative content regulation or undertake certain kinds of limitations depending on the nature of the domain name being registered. If that was something that was in the registrar accreditation agreement, some people seem to be saying that if it's in the registrar accreditation agreement, ICANN has the right and obligation to enforce it, even if it amounts to regulation that is outside of ICANN's mission statement. Now, I think that the problem that we have is crafting something that effectively captures the fact that contracts and regulation are different, but that an attempt to use the registrar accreditation agreement or the registry agreement to route around the mission statement is not fair game. I think that's the issue on the table for us. I think that there are two clear camps here. I'm not sure that anybody would be quite as blunt as I am being about what the issues are. But after, you know, quite a lot of time about trying to sort of finesse this issue, I think that this is an issue we need to put on the table. We need to have some help from, we need to make sure that there is a meeting of minds on this point, that contracts are enforceable, but ICANN can't use contracts to route around, you know, ICANN cannot, you know, impose contracts unilaterally to route around the mission statement limitations and see if we can come up with some language to capture that. So that's the, from my mind, that's the big issue on the table.
I was on mute. Sorry. Thank you very much for this, Becky. I have some hands up, and I'm not sure if some of them might be old hands or new hands, but Kieran, is that a new hand or an old hand? It's an old hand? Okay, Greg, Is that a new hand or an old hand?
New hand.
Oh, go ahead, please.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. First, I have fundamental problems with the way that the problem was stated, the idea that the contractual compliance or contractual enforcement would be used to finesse around to regulation. I just don't see it that way at all. Obviously, you know, reasonable people can differ, but I think that that leaves open, you know, massive ways of trying to limit contractual compliance, contractual enforcement of the language that was agreed. I think overall there are a lot of pitfalls in this particular area. We have no definition of regulation. Regulation is a rule that's imposed by an authority. Are consensus policies not a form of regulation? Why not? And if we're talking about content, are domain names themselves content, or are we only talking about the content of websites? So, you know, is the UDRP in violation of this particular section? And if we look at the stress tests that are attached to these sessions, they actually seem to say that strong enforcement of the contract is regulation, which is, you know, the opposite of what it says in the text and how Becky, you know, interpreted it. So both, you know, 29 and 30 lead us, you know, deeply into the weeds in terms of how to interpret this. So I think that, you know, we need to definitely need to come up with conversation about what the contract, what it means to enforce, you know, particular sections of the contract. And I think we were talking about section 318 of the RAA here, but the registrar agreement. The way to do it is not to try to come up with broad, high-level statements, but really to have to get down in the weeds with it, and that, to my mind, is not something that a bylaw is suitable for. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. Thomas, you want to say something about that, right?
Yeah, I guess that we are in agreement on the principle that the bylaw changes that we're suggesting do not limit ICANN's ability of enforcing contracts. The question is, does this group have suggestions on how we can make that more robust? Do we have concrete suggestions to remove this concern?
Thank you very much, Thomas. Anybody wants to answer the question? Steve?
Thanks. Steve Del Bianco with Commercial Stakeholders Group. Both the BC and the IPC brought this up in a big way in the second round of comments, because during the first round of discussion, we tried to get generally comfortable with assurances from Becky that contractual compliance wouldn't be considered regulation, and we're okay with that at the time. But two folks who submitted comments in the first round, Danielle Kale and David Post of New America Foundation, they specifically requested two new stress tests, and the stress test team is here to serve. So we added stress test 29 and 30. Folks who objected to the stress test might be objecting to the way we analyzed it, but we didn't have any right to just say, no, we're going to ignore you. And the stress test identified the crux of this issue. We honestly don't know what an IRP panel would do if it was given the standard review of a limited mission statement and the stress test presented in 29 and 30, a challenge on the RAA. We also said there's a second problem that Becky hasn't got to yet, but I'm sure that she will. And that is, what about a contract provision, even if it's in a PIC spec, that came from a top-down source? GAC safeguards coming out of Beijing, for instance, a court ruling from another nation. In other words, a top-down that didn't come up through the bottom-up process that's made its way into a contract. That is another part of the bylaws that form the standard of review for an independent review panel. So you'll see on page 112, where stress test 29 is analyzed, the stress test team did its job by suggesting that an IRP might or could potentially find that both were a problem for enforcement of a PIC spec or even enforcement of an RAA, the top-down nature as well as the limitation on scope. And the stress test had its intended effect because it generated a lot of interest and attention, and people commented on it, because if that's the effect of it, well, then we do need to tighten the language that's in the IRP so that it respects contract enforcement.
Thank you very much for this, Steve. Becky wanted to put something in the chat box, but I believe that she's having problems putting it there. So, Becky, would you like to add something to what Steve has just said?
I just want, for purposes of making this conversation most productive, I think we should stipulate that anything within the picket fence, which is ICP-1, is consistent by definition with ICANN's mission statement, and that therefore we need to find a way, if there's any question about that, to make sure that that is not called into question. But if we start talking about things like, is the UDRP, within ICANN's mission or not, we are going to have a less productive conversation than we should have. So I would like to propose that we all agree that if it's in the picket fence, it's within ICANN's mission by definition. If we need to find words to clarify that, that's fine. But for purposes of this particular debate, we need to get into the weeds in a more, in a less general way, and we need to put aside the sort of things that we can agree on. And Greg is asking me if we can assume that everyone knows what the picket fence is. And the answer to that is no. The picket fence is essentially a reference to the mission statement that refers to things that are reasonably necessary or that reasonably require or benefit from or substantially benefit from overall coordination in the interests of security and stability. And there is a much more elaborate statement about that in the registry and the registrar agreement, and it is a consensus policy that is on the consensus policy page that goes into specific detail and talks specifically about disputes about domain name registration and specifically gets at trademark and those kinds of issues. So I would strongly like to, talk about, really talk about the hard questions here as opposed to, the more rhetorical things.
Thank you very much, Becky. Next on the queue, I have Mark Carvell.
Yes, thank you, Leon. Mark Carvell, UK government. This was an issue that we picked up in the UK government's response to the second draft. We felt that the text relating to mission and commitments didn't adequately reflect the commitment of ICANN and the community to the public interest. And we've got an explicit commitment by ICANN to act in the public interest. And when the community comes up with specific concerns, for example, relating to particular kinds of new GTLDs, and from that flows provisions and elements in contractual arrangements, which then ICANN oversees and enforces consistent with its public interest responsibilities, that indicates that this is part of its mission, part of the organization's mission to fulfill that, and we didn't feel it was adequately reflected in the text. And we just simply see the logic of the public interest, ICANN's commitment to that, being reflected in the particular paragraphs of this part of the draft report. So I agree with Becky that we, further work needs to be done to get the kind of text that does that adequately right, and that will be, I think, supported by everybody in the community. And I haven't discussed it with GAC colleagues, but I think that will resonate well with the GAC. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karf. Mark. On the queue, I have Luis. Luis, you might be on mute. Okay, so we're having trouble listening to Luis, and I'll go to Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. I agree with Becky that this is going to need more work. I really have worries, partly akin to what Mark was talking about how an IRP in the future will evaluate the public interest in a given issue, with regard to some of the other, the other commitments. I don't think picket fences is a magic solution. For instance, PICs are clearly contractual commitments, clearly important, and yet are not within the picket fence. So I really think we need to be very, very careful what we put in and make sure that a future IRP is not going to misinterpret what we meant by something, no matter how clear our thinking is today.
Thank you very much, Alan. So the queue is now closed, and I thank Becky for taking us through this. There's, of course, the need to continue the discussion, not only in this end of whether contractual compliance could derive in ICANN going out of its mission, but also I think we have a couple of more issues that need to be further discussed, and I invite you to continue the discussion offline so we can, of course, advance the discussion on other topics today. So I think that our next agenda item is community decision making, and for that I would like to invite Jordan. Is that Jordan, right? Community decision making process? Yes? Okay, so Thomas, would you like to add something? Or I'll hand it to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Leon, and I guess this is the part of the discussion that some of you have been eagerly awaiting, and that is, how does the community make decisions? And let me preface this a little bit, because we called it model and voting, but let's not instantly jump to the model, because I think what we've understood from the discussions earlier is that the board, as well as other commenters, do not necessarily have issues with the model, but the underlying issue is, how does the community come to invoking powers? How does the community come to decisions? And there is a perceived mismatch of the representation of SOs and ACs on the board and in what you find in our voting scheme at the moment. So there's the fear that, you know, four groups only or five groups only can make important decisions, and that the rest of the community, if you wish, can be ignored. And there is a perceived fear of capture. There is a perceived fear of lack of accountability of the community, or actually an actual fear. Maybe it's not just a perceived fear. And I think that regardless of whether you have an MEM or sole designator model or the single membership model, we need to discuss how the community comes to decisions. How does the community form a view on whether or not a community power should be exercised? We have broad agreement that we need certain community powers, but I think what I didn't read in the board's proposal, as well as in the comments, is a solution to fix this. So in the board's papers, there is talk about certain powers need to be invoked by one or two SOACs, and there mustn't be more than one objection. But that sort of equals counting noses, right? So even the board suggestion is not merely focusing on consensus, but it's sort of qualifying consensus by introducing thresholds and objection rights. And we, having followed this discussion from the very beginning, we sort of took the opposite approach and said, well, maybe consensus is too vague a term, and therefore we wanted to enshrine community consensus in a voting pattern to ensure that we have sufficient community support for invoking or exercising certain community powers. And I think that this is the issue. If you look at the public comment and review tool, you will find that we had a total of 8 out of 88 or so commenters saying they disagree with the single membership model. 3 of them, I think, were individuals that said they don't like it. The majority of the concerns lies in the underlying voting scheme. And so I think the way we should structure this discussion is to discuss how the community can come to decisions, what we need to do to have sufficient SOAC accountability, to have this concept of mutual accountability, as we called it earlier, and then, as a second step, look at the legal vehicle to get the enforceability done. Because I think I haven't read any comments so far that would provide a solution for this. So if you, and this very much corresponds to the board's concerns that we've analyzed this morning. So I would like to open it up for discussion with this group, and maybe the starting point could be, and you can pick which aspect of this you would like to speak to, but what do you think is needed to have sufficient SOAC accountability? Are there any concrete measures that you suggest so that we can trust the community to be sufficiently accountable? That's one aspect. The other aspect is, how do you think we need to reflect the community's views in a decision-making process? So do you have ideas on whether it should be voting, whether it should be consensus, who should be considered? There were comments that said we are not inclusive enough with the organizations that are getting voting rights under our scheme. So this is, maybe some of you would like to take the first crack at it. There is a queue forming. I'm not sure whether these are old or new hands, but Louise, fire away. Must be an old hand. Caboose, is that a new hand? Go on.
Thank you. I hope that I could do it in 2 minutes, but it may be difficult to do it. I think the reason that I can propose MEM was, in my view, I may be misunderstood, not to follow the process of voting, which involve to give to ACs in particular, or SOs, a power of decision-making in an explicit manner. They were silent in some area, even though they referred to a resolution, but they did not mention that whether resolution or how the resolution should be adopted. Perhaps they meant that to leave it to each SO, and if they involve AC in future, which I hope they do, to the course of action and procedure that is currently being used in that SO and the ACs, how to come to a decision. But from legal point of view, a decision could be made by unanimity, could be made by full consensus. That means, although some people, they don't agree with the proposal, but they do not formally express their objections, or some sort of, you'd call them qualified consensus, IETF called them soft consensus, and other people have other motions or other definitions, and some people going to the hum issues. That means few people, they coordinate before the meeting and say that as soon as I start, you also start, and then the hum and they finish the issue. TCWG opt for the voting for that. So that is the issue. We start from the voting. When you start from the voting, that you already exclude any unanimity, you exclude any sort of consensus, and you go to the voting. And by going to the voting, you distribute it among all ACs and SOs and give them the authority or power or rights to exercise that rights as appropriate if they want or if they so decide. Some of them, they did not decide yet, and some of them, they want to do that. So, we could seek more clarification from ICANN with respect to the MEM. In many areas, they are silent. For instance, they have not mentioned how the MEM issue group come to the sort of conclusions in order to submit the issue to the standing panel, how the standing panel decide on the matter, and how SO, and if they include AC in future, would have the resolution, whether resolution should be by consensus, whether resolution should be by some other things. So these are the issues. But all of them are exist. Sometimes you cannot have consensus in some area. For instance, election of a president of the country is not by consensus. It requires 100% voting procedures. But some other areas, the first, they try consensus, if it is not possible to have unanimity. But by consensus, it is the obligations or skill of the chairman to or chair to convince the people that the consensus be emerged. It would be difficult, but sometimes it happens. But it depends on the situation. So I think the consensus is a good way of procedure, unless it doesn't work and we have to go to the voting, which some people, they don't like the voting. So you should start from that. It's part of the MEM, it's part of the sole membership, but is not the whole model, but it's a part of the model. So we have to discuss the issue that perhaps we should seek some clarification from ICANN with respect to the MEM, how they think the decision-making at various levels. There are three levels.
Caboose, sorry, I think you're speaking for 4 minutes now.
Yeah.
We would like to hear more views, so can you please come
to the conclusion? Yes, okay, just to finish in a second. It is the SOs in the MEM group and in the standing panel. How the decision-making should be made. Thank you.
Yes, and I think I try to encourage everyone not to discuss options, but a preference. And I understand, Caboose, that your preference lies in consensus rather than voting. So let's move on with the queue. Next in line is Alan.
Thank you very much. ICANN loves the term consensus. We love it so much, we have a near infinite number of definitions for it. Virtually every group uses a different definition. The GAC, for instance, says consensus is if some people want it and no one objects. If we use that term, if we use that definition in the models we're looking at, anyone with a partial vote would have the ability to veto community action. Don't think we want that. The ALAC says we try to make decisions by consensus, but anyone can request a vote. A vote, except in a few special cases, is 50%, is greater than 50%. But if we make a decision by consensus, we're looking for at least 80%. So consensus means to us, most people, not everyone, but a large number of them. It's a far more stringent test than just voting, which is, as I said, 50 plus 1. So the GNSO has a half a dozen definitions of consensus. The CCNSO uses a different one from any of those.
So, which one would you like?
Okay. I don't think we can use consensus. It's going to mean too many things to too many different people. I think voting, actually giving metrics that we can measure and have no misunderstanding, is the only way to go forward, given that we have so many definitions of consensus that are being used within this community. I'm not happy with that solution, but I don't see any way forward.
Okay, but then the subsequent question would be, and this is one that we've been struggling with quite a bit, who should have a vote and how many votes should the individual groups have? And I'm not expecting an answer
now.
Give me
another 2 minutes on that.
You can put yourself back in the queue. Kieran.
Hi. So on voting, to get to the single member idea, I thought when I first heard the single member idea, I thought it was a great idea. It would work. And then I was appalled when I saw the energy and the effort put into people jostling around how many votes they would get, and there's four here and there's five there. And I think the problem is the reality is there's a very, very small number of people from each SO and AC that end up in these positions over and over again. And I think probably, although I don't know, that probably part of the board's concern is that effectively you would end up with another board of people, and they get to decide critical issues. But it's effectively the same small group of people who decide very important things again. That's the reality that we've seen over and over again in ICANN. So I think that a possible solution is that this group doesn't decide how votes are done and who decides what and how many seats they are. I think this group could say each SO and AC gets a vote, and it's up to them to figure out what that vote is. And in that way, you leave it to the groups to figure out their own methods of what is a consensus and how they reach it. Give each one a single vote. It's up to them, and you use those votes to make decisions.
Quick follow-up question, Kieran. ASEC and ASEC would also get one? Same as the GNSO, same as CCNSO?
I don't see why not. We're talking, what we're talking about here, when these sort of extreme powers, is we're talking about very big issues. And I think when you're talking about the supporting organizations and the advisory committees, these are all the arms of ICANN. So they should be able to all get together and say, we don't like this. That should be the mechanism. And if you know, you put some limit on it, 5 out of 7 of them say, this has gone wrong, that's a lot of people saying this has gone wrong. But you give one, but you give one of these single votes and let those groups figure it out for themselves rather than this group try and make sense of all of the different groups. I just don't think it's pragmatic.
Thanks for that. Steve?
Steve DelBianco with the CSG, and my opinions aren't relevant. It's really the groups that I represent in the commercial stakeholders group, and the three questions about who votes, how do they vote, equal or weighted, and is it binary or split? I can give you the preference. That's what you're asking for with respect to that. As far as who votes, most of the commercial stakeholders group believe that everyone would have an opportunity to vote, although in the most recent comment, the Internet service providers did think that perhaps the GAC should not have a vote. On the question of how to vote, all three of the groups in the CSG were supportive of the weights that were indicated in the most recent comment. That was a 5x5 with 2 for the SEC and RSEC. And then finally, on binary voting, which is, I guess, what the GAC is talking about, sorry, the board is talking about in the MAM, a binary vote, in the sense that each AC and SO goes back and yes, answers the question yes or no, through their own means of voting or consensus arrival, as Alan was describing. ALAC would come back and say, we are a yes or we're a no on exercising that power. So that's what I mean by binary. The alternative to that is to be able to split the preference of one's vote. In the case of the GNSO, we have dramatically different constituencies in there. So it's likely that our groups would favor split preference so that, say, 3 of the 5 votes, in the case of a 5-vote weighting, might go for, and 2 of the 5 votes would go against. And then that gets stirred into the pot of the other votes. So the granularity you get with a split preference is obviously preferable to CSG, which is the BC, the IPC, and the ISPs. So I hope that helps to indicate a preference on that, but also to frame the question. A lot of it's by who, how in terms of weighting, and how in terms of binary versus split. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. Bruce is next.
Thanks, Thomas. I just wanted to separate two different types of voting that you seem to be discussing here. So one is arbitration. So in the board's model, the arbitration process, we've basically said that any supporting organisation or advisory committee can raise a petition, and that's through their own consensus process. So they do consensus however it's defined in that group. And then we've just said that there would be some minimum number of SOs to initiate the action. Now, this group could decide the minimum is one. I mean, that'd be the simplest thing. So effectively that collapses to any individual SO or any individual AC could initiate arbitration. That's probably the simplest way to go. Then the other thing that you want to measure a degree of consensus is, say, bylaws changes. And you've got minor bylaws changes versus fundamental bylaws changes. Again, I think you just keep it pretty simple. Like, it's one vote each. You need at least six of the seven to do a fundamental bylaws change, and maybe at least four of the seven to do another bylaws change. But in each case, the way the board was thinking is that on a particular issue, not all SOs or ACs care or even want to be involved. And so we're trying to design our processes that if it is the GNSO and the ALAC, you know, that would be enough for them to initiate a dispute process if they want to. I don't think ESSAC or ARSAC probably even cares about some of the issues that the GNSO and ALAC might. So instead of trying to combine this all into some single member that thinks the same way, we're actually trying to distribute it and say, well, the relevant SO and AC forms a MEM issue group to lodge arbitration. And then for bylaws changes, you just agree what the right number is, whether it's four of the seven or six of the seven or seven of the seven, but they just have one vote each in that context.
Thanks, Bruce. John?
Thanks, Thomas. I just wanted to come back to what I think we were trying to do with the model that is in the second draft proposal. And everyone, I think, accepts that to exercise any of these powers, there should be a high degree of consensus. So that's why even in the voting model, there's a high threshold of votes that you need to accumulate to be able to exercise any of them. But why did we have any vote concept at all? And there were two reasons. One was to give differential influence to different groups. So that's one reason you need some kind of weighing process. If you give the same amount of say to each of the SOs and ACs, then you don't need voting for that reason. The other one was to let people be more granular than yes or no. And so the feeling was that within a particular SO or AC, there may be different thoughts about whether to exercise a power. So within the GNSO, it seemed unlikely that you could always rely on there being a reasonable yay or nay for the entirety of the GNSO. So by allowing individual votes or splits, you could more honestly represent the general consensus views within the ICANN community below the SOAC level. So in the CCNSO, for example, or the GAC, you might choose a regional base. In the GNSO, you might choose the houses. But it doesn't matter what. The point is that it would be delegated to the SOs and ACs to choose that, to make some decisions about it, and then to exercise their choices. So if you don't think that getting anything below the top level of the SOs and ACs is important, and if you don't think that you need any distinction in the weights between groups, then you probably don't need a voting mechanism. You can probably just count up the decisions of the SOs and ACs. I think that would be a very substantive change to the proposal and would require another round of public feedback. Well timed.
That was almost perfect timing. Now, since Jordan was sharing with us the thinking of the sub-team working on that, can we just, you know, this is by no means a vote, but just to sense the atmosphere in the room, do you think we need something more granular for the SOs and ACs rather than having one voice per group? Those who think we need something more granular than not necessarily split, but just not to have, you know, like Kieran said, one vote per organization, but multiple votes in order to allow for a more granular, it can be a split, but it would depend on the group whether they allow for a split or not. So do you think it needs to be more granular than one vote per organization? Those who like think it needs to be more granular, just give me a show of hands. More granular than one. Okay, who thinks that one per organization is the way to go?
Just for clarity, one per organization, you cannot split into fractions.
Yes, one. We can't divide one.
Binary.
Yes or no, per organization. But I think that, you know, at least in this room, many more people want it to be more granular than having it binary. That was just for information. Let's move on with Robin now.
Hi, this is Robin Gross for the record. So I just wanted to raise a couple of the issues that the non-commercial users had brought into some of the public comments, and we wanted to raise here because they're very important to our stakeholder group. And one has to do with what could be seen as sort of, I guess, double dipping, if you will, of, for example, the GAC being able to have a vote and then also having that special privileged advice that must be dealt with. So that's a major concern for a number of us, is trying to deal with that double dipping type of allocation that seems to have come from our proposal. I think another point we have to consider on this issue is that, you know, a lot of these orgs were not set up for the purposes of exercising these kinds of powers. When we set up the GAC, did we really think that this is an organization that should have a veto right over ICANN's budget? I don't think so. I think also looking at some of the RSAC and SAC and appointees, members who are appointed by the board, giving them the power to recall the board, again, it doesn't really make much sense in terms of if you think about what they were set up to do and how they are appointed, and so giving them the power to be a check, it just doesn't make sense in a lot of ways. And I think also another concern that we had has to do with the vote allocation. Our proposal said 4 votes for each, the SOs and the ACs, and I'm concerned about how this can empowers the ACs over the SOs right now. It's a sort of a shifting of the existing power balance within ICANN away from the SOs and towards the ACs, and that change is a major concern for us, and it isn't what we think we were here to do. It isn't the work of this accountability group to sort of rebalance the power interests within ICANN, so it seems a bit out of scope for us to use this opportunity to empower some groups with those much more than relative to others. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Robin. Chris?
I agree with Robin about in her description of changing the balance of power, and that's my fundamental problem with this voting process. The most important thing that we do in ICANN in the SOs is make policy. And in the vast majority of cases, we do that by consensus. We build consensus in the CCNSO. We build consensus in the CCNSO. We have a bylaw requirement that says we have to enroll the GAC in our policy. We build consensus with the GAC. And in my experience of running policy development processes, real ones and sort of slightly not real ones, such as the IDN Fast Track, it was crucial. And if we had to go to voting, the chances are we would never have got it done. We could never have actually brought everybody together to come to an agreement. The problem with a threshold of 66% is that 34% could be vehemently opposed. If the ICANN board was faced with that situation, forgetting enforcement rights, just faced with the situation of the community saying 66% of people said yes to something and 34% of people said no, just to smarch ahead and say, well, 66% of people say yes and not take any account of the 34% who might be vehemently opposed, would be, in essence, the wrong thing to do. The right thing to do would be to bring everybody together and see if you could break off the corners and get to a level of consensus. So I don't have a specific solution right now. I'm happy to work with a group of people on one, but I'm very concerned about the fracturing of the community that will take place if we go to a voting model. I'm very concerned about changing the power base, the possibility that we could have the ASO absent from a vote and a GNSO, CCNSO, ALAC vote being the only thing, the only 3 SOs involved is a real problem for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Sean?
Thank you. This is Sean for the record. I won't say anything about voting. I think a lot has been said already about that. I just want to answer one of your questions that you asked, Thomas, and that is the aspect of how do we get the community forum powers used. I think we need to get a basic principle. We want to agree on the principle that there is no power, there is no community power that will be exercised without certain threshold across the AC and SOs. Right now, the CCWG proposal does not reflect that. And I think that's a fundamental requirement or principle that we need to have. And if we agree on that, then we can actually see how we can allocate the votes if necessary. Thank you.
Okay, Sean, I think there's a misunderstanding. The community forum is a place where discussion takes place in the public. The decisions are being made in the individual SOs and ACs after the discussion has been held publicly in the community forum. And then, you know, according to our report, the votes are cast and a decision is either made, a decision is made, which is either carried or not. But
sorry, just a minute. Okay, maybe community forum is not the word. I'm trying to remember how you phrased the question in the first place. But my point is that any exercise of the community powers needs to be done by the entire SOs and ACs. Because, for instance, removal of individual by board member, for instance, at the moment as it stands now, it's a process that gets triggered by an SO and gets completed by an SO or AC that appointed. So I think we need to get past that phase where we say one community can actually remove or exercise the power, because it does not actually put the sense of multi-stakeholderism into practice, because it just looks like we're creating a basis for war within the community in the near future. Thank you.
Sean, just for me to understand this correctly, you're saying that all SOs and ACs must participate in the process, or are you saying that everybody's consent is required for a community power to be exercised? Need unanimity?
Yeah, we need unanimous. No. We need certain level of consensus, whether it is by rough or by whatever, maybe by voting threshold that we're currently discussing, across the SOs and ACs before any community power can be exercised. That's my point.
Okay, so that's exactly what we have in the proposal at the moment. So next is Avi.
Thomas, just to clarify, except for the removal of individual directors.
That is my point.
I think Soon is saying that that should be applied to all of the powers, including that one.
Okay.
Is that right, Sean?
Exactly. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Avi speaking. I ended up taking a minority position from my stakeholder group, and I actually find myself in probable disagreement with many here. I do not see this as a restructuring of the power base or the power distribution. I think that when you look at ICANN in a relatively abstract manner, you see that we have defined all of these organizations, SOs and ACs, in a particular balance, so that they all have a different notion that they're representing in the overall, but none of them is more equal than any of the others. And when we're talking about these issues, we're not talking about any of the point issues that are the responsibilities of the SOs. We're more talking about the general community, and if anything else, that's more the province of the advisory committees than the SOs. So I think any notion that gets us into this group is more important than the other. So I tend to believe that it really should be equal. Now, in terms of the GAC, is it double dipping? I actually got to the point, and this is me contradicting things I said months ago, is that it isn't double dipping. That in an abstract sense, when I look at the recommendations of an SO, I look at the advice, the different processes that advice come in, the board can turn any of them down following a certain position. So, again, I do not see it as a double dipping. I see it as we all have various abilities, and we can all be overruled at some point. So I don't see it as a rebalancing. I think the parity of all the organizations is necessary, and I think a supermajority vote would not fracture the organization.
Thanks very much, Aubrey. My Adobe crashed, so I need to look here. Sebastian is next.
Thank you. I agree with Aubrey. I would like us to try to find a solution, simple as possible, involving everybody and each groups. I agree also with Steve Del Bianco about granularity and the explanation given by Jordan. It's important that we are organized by stakeholders, but they are not the only way to see the world. The world can be seen and in different ways, the region, the language, the whatever other diversity items you want to take. Then we need to allow this possibility of diversity, not in putting everybody, if you are an end user, you need to vote as all the end user, and the same for the other groups. And the vote must be the end of a process to reach the broader consensus possible. That means that the process in the discussion must allow to try to find the biggest, the broader consensus. And at the end, if we, if the organization need to vote, it's at last resort. And I hope that it will be done by each and every group in this organization. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. So Alan was in the queue, and then you were kicked out, I guess. So Alan would be next.
Sorry. I've got a whole number of things, and I'll make them all really quick. With respect to double dipping, from my perspective, the GNSO gets to set, recommend policy to the board. The board has to look at. They send directors to the board, and now they're going to be voting. That's triple dipping. So depending on how you look at it, the dipping is varying depending on what your role is. Right now, the ALAC is half dipping by the same standard. So I really don't like that discussion. It's not particularly surprising that when you ask for hands, most of the people in this room put up granularity hands. Most of the people here are representing small parts of the organization. They want to maintain their voice. Makes complete sense. One of the reasons the ALAC has supported all along less community power and less enforceability is we believe the board is the only group that is charged with balancing the various priorities of the organization, whether it's GAC advice versus GNSO recommendations, whether it's public interest versus something else. None of the rest of the groups have that charge. And so I think it's always going to be problematic if we start adding up votes and treating them all equal or in whatever weight we say. That seems to be the only option we have, however, if we are going to give direct power to the community that way. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. Suzanne?
Thank you, Tomas. I actually just took my hand down, but that's all right. I'll take just a second. It was actually a knee-jerk response to a couple of comments made about, you know, why don't we try a regional breakdown? Why don't we try this? Why don't we try that? I do think we are all better served if we respect the fact that all of the SOs and ACs use completely different methodologies, and we should leave the methodologies to each SO and AC. One size definitely does not fit all. I just wanted to reinforce that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Suzanne. Eric?
Thank you very much. Responding to Kieran's one vote per SE suggestion and the follow-up question by Thomas about SAC and RSAC, I want to point out that the missions of the SAC and I suppose that of the RSAC are quite specific and limited to issues that directly affect their ambits. That would be security and stability for SAC and other routes for RSAC. The SAC itself has made its position clear in SAC 71, which is available to you all. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Brett?
Thank you. Getting back to the GACT issue, I don't believe that this is an issue of double dipping versus not double dipping. I believe that this is an issue of whether or not the GAC has an expanded authority with this voting privilege than what it has currently. And I don't think that's disputable. What we have here is a GAC that has privileged ability to send advice to the board and to compel the board to negotiate with it. In this, they will have that. And then they will also have the voting privileges under this single member entity that we're proposing here. And I think that this might run afoul of the NTIA criteria in terms of replacing NTIA with a government-led or a government intergovernmental organizational solution, in that governments have an authority outside of this room that nobody else in this ICANN world has, whether you're GNSO, whether you're the business constituency, whether you're anybody else. And with this enhanced authority under the model, the voting model, and through the privileged device, I think that that would be a substantial increase in the authority of the GAC vis-a-vis ICANN. And I believe that they should be forced to choose. If they want to maintain their privileged advisory role, then the GAC should be enabled to do that. But they should not be able to vote at that same time. If they want to vote as a part of this process, then they should be surrendering their privileged advisory role. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Sam?
Sure. This is Sam Eisner, and I'm speaking right now in my capacity as a member of the CCWG. I have stated before in my capacity as a member that I don't support the single-member model, but I think you can take my contribution regardless of the model that you choose. I echo the comments of Avery and of Alan that and others about the equality among SOs and ACs when we're looking at the different powers that we're agreeing that the community should hold, whatever mechanism we use to give the community these powers. The SOs each have very specific policy-related responsibilities within ICANN. The ACs each have very specific advisory roles within ICANN. None of the groups within ICANN currently have specified roles within the ICANN operational work that the CCWG is looking to bring in power. So I think it's really important that we remind ourselves that, and we're changing the way each of these organizations work within the model. I know that there are open questions about the GAC and how it could fit in other advisory roles, but I think that it's important to remember that a single group that might have a policy basis within the organization around a certain, names or numbers doesn't give it a special role within operations. This is creating something new across the organization. I wanted to respond also to a comment that Thomas made in response to Sean, where Sean said that he thought that if it went to voting, that the voting would have to be across all SOs and ACs. And Thomas, I heard you say that that's exactly what the model put on the table by the CCWG does. I disagree with that. The model put forward by the CCWG gives the opportunity for all SOs and ACs to choose to come in. However, it does not require all of them to participate, and it actually could exclude some of them based on specific timings of whether or not they choose to be part of the member or not. I think that's a very clear distinction that needs to be made.
Thanks, Sam. Jordan?
Thanks. Just personal views on two things to add into the debate. One is that when I hear people saying that the composition of the accountability tools decision makers should be the same as in the board, I get a bit nervous. If you've ever looked at national legislatures that have a main legislating chamber and a review chamber, review bodies are never comprised the same way or through the same system as the bodies that they're reviewing or holding to account. The reason for that is simple. If you've got two groups of people composed the same way with the same mandate and they don't agree, then you've created a logjam at the core of your model. So as a matter of principle, I don't think it does rebalance power in the ICANN model if the accountability tools have decisions made by a broader or a differently composed group. In fact, I think it's essential that it be different. So that's why I thought that the 5x5 and 2x2 was useful. The other point is that this is a narrow set of accountability tools that are being talked about decisions-wise here. Giving the GAC a say in whether those tools are used or not does not turn ICANN into a government-led organization. I cannot make that link. I cannot make the link of having an advisory group like any other advisory group participating there, turning this into a governmental-led organization. It just doesn't sustain. It isn't a logical claim to make in my mind. So I just wanted to put that on the table.
Thanks, Jordan. Anne?
Thank you, Tomas. Anne Aikman-Scalise with the IPC. And first comment is I really want to express my appreciation for how the chairs have handled this meeting today, and the review of public comments has been quite thorough, and I think progress is being made, and I thank you very much. With respect to this particular issue, the suggestion that the recommended model from the CCWG would fracture the organization and prevent it from developing consensus, which is the way it has been working heretofore, I see the new recommended structure as, in fact, encouraging consensus, because what we've had in the past is the GAC rendering advice, and then separately the GNSO making its recommendations, and then separately others commenting and writing letters to the board. To me, the structure that's proposed is one where there can be a discussion by all of the SOs and ACs within the community, and potential for resolving differences prior to those differences reaching the board and the board having to resolve them while the community remains, you know, upset one SO and AC with another for who has the most power. I think it's an opportunity for collaboration and consensus across the community rather than something that will be fracturing to the organization. Lastly, with respect to the subject of quote-unquote double dipping, again, on the principle that this model encourages collaboration and consensus building within the community, I do not think the GAC would be double dipping at all by coming into this process. I think they would just be coming in earlier. The community in general has been somewhat frustrated with the pace of receipt of GAC advice, and this will, in fact, encourage more active participation if the GAC is present within this process that's been described and recommended by the CCWG. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Anne, and that was perfect timing as well. Greg?
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I think that the ACs do pose a challenge in a sense. I wouldn't use the term double dipping, but there is certainly a question with regard to their nature and scope and whether it makes sense in any particular instance for any SO or AC that has earlier influenced or made a decision that is now being voted on again, what the nature of their participation should be. So it may not even be limited. I think the GAC tends to raise the question most directly, because GAC advice seems to have a very broad remit at this point in ICANN's history. So there is a chance that they could, come in twice on the same issue at different points, whether it would be earlier or later. But I think that could also potentially be true of GNSO policy recommendations if there then becomes, an issue raised later about something that's an outgrowth of those policy recommendations. I think what we really need to look at is how the balance of the community is carried forward and whether we can really work through this issue, because it is, as Sam says, it's a repurposing in a way of all of the organizations. And so we really need to look at getting stakeholders to the table and to come up with a decision and I think Anne says a collaborative decision. We have to figure out how one meshes collaboration and voting, and I only have 12 seconds, so I don't have the answer for that. Thank you.
I would give you 10 more seconds if you gave us an answer. So, Kusai.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, let me echo the comment of my dear colleague, Suzanne, who said to keep it to the organizations to decide how they would vote. I think the current model where we have a consensus and on position of an organization is much better for the process of, let's say, public policies or that is currently adopted within the ICA. The voting system or the voting approach report here, I think it will raise more complication rather than would support such a process, especially when we'll say there is it we are supporting this decision 2 out of 5 or 1.75? Is it support is it support 2 or against 3? And rather than discussing the policy itself and having a consensus with a credible support, suddenly the voting itself became an issue. So actually this will raise a complication rather than pushing or moving things forward. Again, let's suppose that the support organizations and the ACs all supported the public specific policy, but they chose, the voting was 2-2-2-2-2, and if we counted these votes, they are still not the majority out of the total. So what will be the case here? So the voting as it is here will raise more complication rather than support. Thank you.
Thank you for that. We have Cavus, Chris, Jonathan, and after that we're going to try to take stock.
Thank you so much. I didn't pronounce in favor or against consensus. You concluded that. That was not my proposal. Number one. Number two, we have to look into the two models that we have, MEM and sole member, and we have to see where are the areas that we have to decide. The first area in both is at the level of the SOs, or SO and ACs. We call them petition, I can call them as a level of SOACs. Why not we leave it to the procedures enforced in those SO and ACs today? We don't decide on that. Second level, I leave it for a minute and go to the third level, and that is the panel, standing panel of ICANN, and they have mentioned that simple majority. We have mentioned in our panel simple majority. So we are together. The only issue remains the MEM issue group and our sole member. Why not we leave it to those to decide on the way that they have to make decisions? A similarity with that would be in ICG, we had discussions very, very extensively. Finally, we come to the conclusion that we have to document it, and we prepare a document describing how the decision should be made, and that is well documented. So why not we go to that way as one option? Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Chris?
So, Jordan said that this is what we're talking about is a narrow set of accountability tools, and that's true, but they're the most powerful tools this organization or the community in this organization will have. Changing the bylaws, blocking bylaw changes, spilling the board. These are incredibly powerful. So the fact that they happen to be narrow and about accountability change the fact that they're incredibly important. Let me run one possible scenario for you. The difficulty with putting in bright lines and boundaries around participation in mechanisms and voting is that you end up with some really challenging problems. Let's say the SAC says, no, we're not going to play. Say the RSAC says, no, we're not going to play. Say the GAC remains as an advisory committee. And let's assume for the moment that the ASO decides that it's only going to involve itself in this mechanism in respect to matters that have to do with numbers. That leaves the CCNSO, the GNSO, and the ALAC as your pool for dealing with incredibly important decisions. You've got, if you'd go the 5 votes each, you've got 15 votes. 66% is in effect 2, so you've blocked 1. I would argue that that's sort of incredibly specific boundary with strict voting is just not going to work in what is an incredibly difficult community to manage from the point of view of having industry, even the GNSO, just on its own, industry with on one side IP. It's just that the concept of having it based around, I've got no problem with the decisions, I've got no problem with triggering the powers, but I think we need to find a way to trigger those powers, irrespective of the model that's built around a consensus base. Using the tools we already have may be one way to do it, the way that the SOs and ACs already operate within their own boundaries, which is acceptable to everybody in their own AC and SO, and then bringing that up to a consensus-based view at the top. That's not anything like a fleshed-out answer, but I'm very clear that I have really big concerns about the voting. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. I agree that it's not fleshed out. Couldn't resist, sorry. Jonathan.
I apologize, Jonathan Zook, for the record. I apologize in advance that my thoughts aren't completely fleshed out either, but it's sort of a combination of something Chris raised earlier that Alan said and that Greg said, which is kind of comparing and contrasting scenarios in which either the community, and I'm not trying to exclude the board when I say the community, but this, we're talking about the non-board community and the board, and how they would handle dissension and votes and differences of opinion and define consensus. And as Alan said, I believe that in order to empower the community, you're going to have to find a way to measure consensus. That the lack of measurement has been a convenience in a way, but it has also led to a kind of laziness on the part of the community that has brought far too many decisions, substantive decisions, to the board than it ought to, and that more of those decisions should have been turned back the way that Chris described, in fact, with his 66-34% example. And so I completely agree with that, but what's innate in that discussion, And I want to try very hard not to place a value judgment on it, but to raise the question. What's innate in that discussion is a type of paternalism that says, if the community can't get it right, we need the board to bring up the interests of the group that got left out. We need them to rise to some higher level and solve that problem. And the board votes in order to execute its power now. And there are people that are on the board that might feel very strongly that a decision the board is taking isn't the right decision. And yet the community is not in a position to champion the interests of those poor board members that were left out in a vote. So it really does boil down to a fundamental question of when these big issues, as Chris described, are being discussed, is the board more capable of handling rising above the din, or is the non-board community more capable of doing that? That's the fundamental question that's being discussed, and all this discussion of models are just reflections of different interpretations of that reality.
Thanks, Jonathan. I think one thing has become very clear in this discussion. Few people said what they want. Rather, they said what they didn't want. Some said what they want, but there doesn't seem to be a unanimous view in this group on how we can determine what the community wants. So listening to what's been said, let me try share, you know, an idea that builds on a lot of things that have been said. We want to keep things simple, so I think it would be good to build on something that we already know. In the GNSO, for example, the policies are being made in working groups based on consensus. The consensus determination is done by a working group chair. There's a process through which the consensus determination can be challenged because the person determining consensus has some sort of power. So we need to make sure that, you know, the person determining the consensus can't be bribed and stuff like that. So that, you know, in the GNSO, that process can be challenged. Has the consensus determination be correct or not? And then, and this is something that people tend to forget, we do make policy by consensus, but the GNSO Council votes. and they don't vote on the substance of the policy, but they vote on whether the process has been followed. And maybe this is something that we can copy for this exercise. So if we have an issue with voting and balancing votes and attributing votes to parts of the community, why not forget about that? Use consensus, have the SOAC leaders or appointees jointly do the consensus call after, let's say, hearing all the views from the community, and they can make a judgment taking into account how big a group chiming in was, what the importance, so to speak, of this group is. Because in consensus calls, we don't count noses, but we want to determine how much support for certain areas there is in the community. So you could have something based on consensus. You would need to attribute votes. You would have SOAC leaders or appointees of this group checking whether what the consensus level in the community is. And you could even have a challenge process in case people think that the consensus determination wasn't correct. So we would have a combination of the consensus plus validating the consensus, and if you wanted to, you could even add a voting thing on whether the process was followed or not. So that would sort of be a hybrid thing between voting and consensus. What are your views? Do you think, you know, by thinking that through further, we could maybe bridge the gap between the views?
I think it's quite late in the day to answer that question.
So, Shireen has raised his hand. And then Alan.
Well, you just troubled me by talking sense now in what you just said. But I think...
Thanks so much, Shireen.
No,
much appreciated.
I raised my hand at the time when Chris said what he said and Jonathan said, and I really felt I am totally aligned with the two points that they both bring to the board, to this group. So you seem to you've listened and you made the suggestion. So I'm going to stop here, and we should absorb what you just said and try and make sense of it. But I think, like everybody said, it's a bit too late to respond to it at this hour. So.
Alan,
two comments. Jonathan said, "Is the board the only group capable of making subtle distinctions?" I don't think so, but they're the only one charged with it. The others have particular, the people may have the capabilities, but the group is charged with doing something different. So I think one has to be careful what question you ask. In terms of what you just proposed, having the people, if the consensus rules, if you end up with ACs and SOs taking strong positions differing from each other, you're putting their chairs in a rather difficult position. And I don't think, I think that goes back to Jordan's, that the group making the decision, the upper chamber, is the same structure, and they're almost bound, or at least would be in a rather difficult position if they didn't follow what the advice was of their group. And lastly, on the GNSO, normally in GNSO work groups, they decide things by unanimity. Yes, we have all the levels of consensus, but almost always there is grudgingly enforced unanimity, sometimes forcing things down to the lowest common denominator, sometimes not. On the rare cases where there are judgment calls, and you are perhaps painfully aware of the one I'm thinking of, the...
Still trying to overcome the trauma.
I understand. That went to the GNSO, and the GNSO, by vote, decided which ones to pass on and which ones not to. So,
just before we continue the queue, to avoid misunderstandings, because there seems to be some confusion about what I suggested, I'm not saying that the task for those determining the consensus level is easy. But we have that in all working groups. We have that in all cross-community working groups. So that's a concept that we will see more and more. And I think we should maybe be brave and just trust the cross-community, the community as such, to make such determination, because that adds to accountability. If co-chairs from different parts of the community have to make a judgment jointly, And this traumatizing PDP experience that you're referring to, I was chairing the IGO PDP working group, but the interesting thing was, and that could maybe also serve as a role model here, we came up with policy recommendations, we reached rough consensus in the working group on them, it went to the GNSO Council, and even those that severely opposed the policy recommendations voted in favor of the recommendations because they said due process was followed. And I think this is what could be an idea for this exercise. There can be friction on whether community power should be exercised or not, but the co-chairs could jointly determine whether the process, whether the consensus determination was okay or not. And with that, let's move further on in the queue, and I'm not suggesting we should be discussing this proposal only. This was just to stimulate discussion and maybe come out of the deadlock that we seem to be in. Greg.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. First, Alan, you and I must have been on different working groups because I found, and I don't think that's actually the case, was I found that rough consensus rather than unanimity is what rules the day, and actually within the GNSO, our Standing Committee on Improvements is anomalous because it requires full consensus to move forward. And indeed, we have five levels of consensus and maybe even created a sixth of consensus against, in part because of the one of the working groups that I participated in and maybe that we participated in. But in any case, I think that this gives us great food for thought. And in fact, if I had taken the 10 seconds that you offered me and had your brain in my head, I would have thought of the same thing because I think it actually does answer the question of how do you combine collaboration and voting. And the answer, in a sense, is the consensus process. It really is a combination. It is a hybrid. And in fact, I think that if the single member operates more like a working group, maybe even this working group, although I shudder maybe to think of this as the paradigm, but more often than not, I think we actually are functional. Then I think that actually, you know, goes toward the issue of making fewer changes and, you know, calms some of the concerns about are we becoming a voting organization? Is consensus being pushed to the rear? If we can operate, even as we make our most critical decisions, in a basis on consensus rather than based on voting power and winning and losing, then I think we can possibly bridge this gap and come up with something where we can achieve maybe even what Alan hopes for, which is unanimity. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. I can't resist just commenting on one thing you said. You said, if you had my brain in your head. I think today you don't want my brain in your head, to be honest. Next in line is Sebastian.
Thank you. My first reaction to your proposal, Thomas, is the process was well followed. Who will do the job? At the end, if we set up a new organization to decide if the process were followed, if we have the IRP to do that, and if we have the board to do that, it may be a little bit too much. And in this organization, we say we don't want votes, but in which organization we don't vote? In At Large, in ALAC, there is vote. In board, there is vote. In GNSO, there is vote. Then maybe we can stop a little bit about talking vote is a bad thing because everybody is using it. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. Chris?
Just to say that two things. One, I think your suggestion is definitely worth pursuing and considering. It would be fantastic if we could find a way of doing that and fleshing some of that stuff out, maybe in a smaller group to bring back. I don't know, but that's just a suggestion. And the other thing I wanted to say is I typed it into the chat room in respect to Jonathan's comment. So I agree with that, with what he said. And in some respects, I think in the current situation, I do not suggest that this always works or maybe even ever has. But I would say the current role of the board is to facilitate the community to come to consensus. So it's not to come in at the end and say, we will now decide. It's actually to facilitate where there is a split community. In this particular thing that we call ICANN, different from almost any other organization, the role of the board is to help facilitate the community to consensus. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. We have a little less than 45 minutes to go. I understand that Nigel asked for the human rights topic not to be discussed at the end of the day when everybody is exhausted. So I would suggest that, and it's with his agreement, that we do this first thing in the morning tomorrow. And we will make sure that no one is asleep tomorrow. But I think that we might even take a little bit more time on this discussion, because I think we need to get some ideas on how to improve SOAC accountability sufficiently for us to feel okay with giving responsibility to this community, because that seems to be an underlying concern with the board as well as with other commenters. So I think that with the voting versus consensus, we can't go much further, but we should have a sub-team, or maybe there's going to be a huddle somewhere tonight over a beer where people want to think more about this. So let's end this discussion on the voting versus consensus. But let's talk a little bit about SOAC accountability. And let's not just say it's needed, but I'd like to go out of this room and have an action list, an inventory of what we think is needed to have sufficient SOAC accountability to be able to give or to feel comfortable to give powers to this community. Remember, our group came to the conclusion with a lot of community support that the U.S. government backstop should be replaced by an empowered community. So I think there's consensus on that notion that the community should have powers. Nobody said it shouldn't, but there doesn't seem to be sufficient trust in the way the community is currently set up to give it this responsibility. So what is needed? Let's just collect, and you don't have to explain this at length, but let's collect some of the measures or tools that we need to put in place in order to get a sufficient level of trust in the community. So who wants to go first? I see Steve was the, you know, you've been so fast, you would have done a good job with digital archery, I trust.
I've got a lot of arrows in the back, so probably. Steve Del Bianco with the CSG. So, Thomas, a direct answer to your question on community accountability was something the stress test team attempted to tackle in Stress Test 33, which was requested by Larry Strickling back in June, and this is on page 116. We proposed three accountability measures to answer NTIA's stress test, which was that participants in an AC or SO might attempt to capture that AC or SO by arranging to be overrepresented in a working group in the election of officers or voting on a decision, and as a consequence, undermine the whole credibility and accountability of the stakeholder community. We outlined three measures in proposed accountability. The first is that ICANN's bylaws already require periodic reviews of each AC and SO. That's like the GNSO review we've just concluded. In those reviews, that is where protections against internal capture are typically recommended for adoption, and changing the bylaws-based charter of each of those ACs and SOs. So that's the first. The second is that the ACs and SOs can unilaterally revise their charters and operating procedures if they see that there's a need to protect against internal capture that threaten from within. However, that particular capture scenario could be inhibited, right? Because if somebody has successfully captured GNSO, they could block the bylaws change that would have fixed the charter. And then finally, if a captured AC or SO sent advice or policy to the board or voted in the community mechanism, then any of the other disenfranchised ACs and SOs or entities that were within the captured AC could then challenge the board's decision to follow that tainted advice using a reconsideration or an IRP. And they would cite the fact that there was no proper accountability of the AC or SO's views. So I think these are three measures, and they're on page 116 of the stress test section. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. Ellen?
Thank you. I think part of the question is, if you look at the discussions we've had on ACSO versus accountability, one of the undecided issues is it supposed to be accountable to those people who choose to participate or to the wider groups that they represent? You know, so to, to pick on IPC, do they represent just the IPC members who are voting members of the IPC, or intellectual property lawyers in general? The same with the business community, which has a very tiny percentage of actual businesses participating in ICANN. The same with ISPs. And we've never actually come down on what the answer is. And the people who think that when the NTIA said we have to be accountable to the internet stakeholders, many of those people took that to be a community far wider than ICANN. And we've never really addressed that fully. And if you look at large, which is perhaps one of the more awkward ones, because we have a huge community out there. But at that point, how close do we get to the 2000 elections in ICANN, where you have a huge community, but that community might well be captured and you can't even tell? And they're certainly not necessarily well informed of the details of what we're looking at here. So we're stuck between a rock and a hard place. We generally don't represent the communities outside, but when we do, we're not sure to what extent they're really capable of making the decisions that we want them to make. I don't have any answers, but there's some real difficult questions.
Thanks for that. And just to let everybody know that Jan Art Scholte, one of our advisors, has made reference to the sections in our report, paragraphs 467 and 500, which spell out the preliminary ideas of SOAC accountability. That's important, but obviously, according to the commenters, that doesn't go far enough. Yeah, so I think we need to add to that to come to a satisfactory level. Robin.
Thank you, Thomas. This is Robin Gross for the record. So I just wanted to talk about this concept of trust that we keep hearing over and over. I think it is a bit misplaced, frankly. I mean, trust is an emotion, a very subjective emotion. We don't need emotions. We need processes in place that will help to make sure the organization functions properly. So I think it's somewhat taking us in the wrong direction to say how do we build trust, because I think that that's just a subjective emotion that is the wrong measuring stick. I think we need processes that actually meet our goals and objectives, and that should perhaps be a little bit of a higher priority than trust. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. Mathieu.
Yes, this is Mathieu Veil speaking. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Thank you very much. So I think what I'm trying to do here is give a quick overview of what we've done so far in terms of SOAC accountability and what I've heard in the recent discussions. And we've heard a lot about SOAC accountability, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly, because it's basically at the core of many of the concerns and issues we've been discussing since this morning. So number one, there are existing mechanisms for accountability within the existing SO and ACs. They may not be the same for all, but there are some. Number two, our report, as Jan Art has reminded us, does actually recommend two things. One is that the regular SOAC reviews that are undertaken every 3 years, their scope be extended to include accountability, and we'll remind everyone that it's external studies but under board supervision, so it's a part of the mutual accountability of the model. And accountability here is, I believe, specifically designed to be accountability to those who participate in those bodies, but also accountability to those who these bodies are designed to represent. So that's an answer to Alan Greenberg's question. The report also suggests that further work on this is undertaken under Workstream 2. So, three, what have we heard in the public comment around this item? Number one, we've heard a suggestion by Jan Art that the IRP scope be extended to include the ability to challenge the regularity of the single member decisions.
has it followed due process? We've discussed this about board removal earlier today. That's, I think, a very interesting suggestion to study. We've also received a suggestion, I think it was by my familiar country of France, to set up a conflict of interest inspector office or something similar to investigate and assess any potential collusion or conflicts of interest that would affect decision-making in the SOACs. And finally, number four, we've heard from the chat and the discussions today that some of the powers that we are considering for the community over the board could also be used for instance, removing councillors or chairs of the ASO and ACs, and that's something that I've heard read in the chat while we were discussing today, and that could be related to ASO-AC accountability. And that will be it for my inventory so far. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Mathieu. Next is Kieran.
Thank you. Mathieu said a lot of things that I was going to say. But I do think it might be useful when you're talking about accountability of SOs and ACs for people that each time there's an election, people say how many to have the stats on how many people stood for that election and to have the stats on has that person, how many roles have they been in that SOAC and how many years they've been doing it. Put a little bit of a light on the fact that it is often the same people over and over again, and has been that case for many, many years. It may also be useful to sort of force SOs and ACs to produce reports about what for years we've called outreach and how effective that outreach is. If the amount of years of outreach that there's been hasn't produced that many people, so it might be useful in the same way that producing metrics that the ICANN produces and the IANA produces. It might be useful to put metrics on how many people did you reach out to, how many people turned up at an ICANN meeting, how many people engaged in your discussion on this, and force those groups to look at that and to report back on that. And if you're looking at very low figures all the time, then maybe ICANN can start. Other parts of the organization can start looking at it and saying you have very, very low figures here. You've got very low improvement in outreach. That's a definite accountability mechanism. I don't think that the procedures and processes that a lot of SOs and ACs follow are available or readily readable. That's a clear accountability mechanism. I don't think the membership is particularly transparent in a lot of occasions. That's another accountability mechanism. The board is required to provide a board rationale these days for whenever it makes a decision. I see that very often in SOs and AC decisions. That would be useful. Explicitly stated, sometimes it's in there at the end of a 30-page report, but it would be good to have that up top. And basically, a lot of the things that the community has designed over the last 5 years or so for the board, I think you could simply apply them to the SOs and ACs and make them drink a little bit of their own medicine, and maybe that would help across ICANN.
Thanks very much, Kieran. Chris?
Thank you. Here I am at the microphone again, calling to Kieran, picking holes in everything that's been done by the CCWG. Global public interest. The board is obliged to act in the global public interest. If the community, SOs and ACs, want to share responsibility with the board, then SOs and ACs have to also act in the global public interest. That means you have to do exactly what we do. You have to declare all of your interests. You have to recuse yourself if there is a conflict. You cannot participate in a decision if you have a commercial interest in it. All of the things that the SOs and ACs, currently take for granted, as the ability to involve themselves in debate and vote on matters in which they have a financial interest, become incredibly complicated if you are now sharing the responsibility of acting in the global public interest. Kieran's points about transparency and openness are absolutely spot on. The SOs and ACs would need to have exactly the same mechanism in place to spill their counsels. with or without cause, and for precisely the same reasons. If we don't do all of this stuff, then it becomes it's not weighted properly. Now, leaving aside any changes in the balance of power, you have to, if you're going to go down the accountability road, that's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you're putting the board to a higher level than the community, but giving the community the power. That doesn't work. Everyone has to be on the same platform. Right now what happens is you guys, I include myself amongst them as a CCNSO person, we go away, we do our stuff, the board comes back, the board has the fiduciary responsibility, the board has the obligation to comply with its articles and its et cetera, and that's going to change to be shared responsibility. So everyone has to be on the same platform, everyone has to put themselves through the same conflict, the same everything. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Chris. Steve?
Steve DelBianco for the CSG, but in this instance, bringing up something from the stress test work team. Earlier, we talked about stress test 33 with respect to capture. 34 was also requested by Larry Strickling at NTIA. Stress test 34 on page 117 said stakeholders who attempt to join an ICANN, AC, or an SO bump into barriers that discourage them from participating. And Larry said that that's barrier to entry, whether actual or perceived, whether intentional or accidental, calls into question ICANN's credibility in applying the multi-stakeholder model. So I never really expected any of you to read the stress tests, but it's great having them right here so that I can actually cite and answer Thomas's questions. So I'll do the same. There are four proposed answers to that question. First, the bylaws require those periodic reviews of each ACNSO. In those reviews, periodic review of the GNSO, for instance, barriers to entry should be assessed and should generate recommended changes. Two, the affirmation of commitments, which we're baking into the bylaws, requires ATRT reviews. And item D in the ATRT review says, quote, assess the extent to which ICANN's decisions are embraced, supported, and accepted by the public and the Internet community. That is a wide-open opportunity for ATRT to say, we're talking about the public and the Internet community, not just the ICANN community. Number three, the ombudsman could help a new entrant to join an AC or SO. And number four, finally, CCWG proposed a new core value that Becky didn't cover this morning. There's a new core value in ICANN's bylaws, and it requires ICANN to employ open, transparent, bottom-up, nightly stakeholder policy development processes, and here's the new stuff, that seek input from the public for whose benefit ICANN shall in all events act. And that's new language, and that language is in the core values, and it becomes the standard of review for an IRP. So in that respect, an IRP can be brought challenging the fact that we are not open to the people we're supposed to be representing, and that could overturn decisions coming from ACs and SOs that are underrepresentative.
Nice timing, Steve. Greg?
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. Alan, since you picked on the IPC first, I'd like to answer your question, but it would take more than 2 minutes, so maybe we'll have a drink or dinner and I can answer. But I do think that we're hitting some important points here. And actually, having been the president of the IPC for the last 7 months, I've been facing some of these issues and trying to improve our own record on that. We've founded an outreach and engagement task force. We have added a publicly archived email list. We've added a list of our historical list of officers and directors, officers and counselors, which we'd never had before. Some of these are recommendations that are in the GNSO rules, but not being followed. Obviously, a group of volunteers, trying to back and fill those things is taxed. More support would be helpful on those. On those very aspects, but I think this is part of the maturation process. But I think that the short answer that I can give without being given a drink or dinner is that we are invested in a common trust here, to use the word trust in a different way, and that we have a common enterprise. And while there's obviously certain balancing of enlightened self-interest and common interest and public interest that goes on, I think that ultimately, the basis of trust in the multi-stakeholder model generally is critical to our future and to our plan. So every effort we can make to follow the points that Steve mentioned, to follow the points that are in the, for instance, the GNSO rules, to increase outreach and engagement, to lower friction and barriers. Those are all important things.
Thanks, Greg. So we have, I think, two or three more people in the queue. And before we listen to them, let me just say that according to Fadi, we're going to be experimenting with a little bit of alcohol soon and see what the impact of that on our consensus finding will be. So let's see how that's going to work out. I see Sebastian's hand is up.
Yes, that's a good idea. As you know, I don't drink any alcohol, but I used to play rugby, and the third mi-temps, as we say, it's very interesting when the other drink and I don't. And then let's go for this experiment. It's the question about the SO and AC accountability, it's a very important point, not too much regarding the board, but regarding the participant and the overall community. But I have the impression that finally we get the expression of the real thinking of the board of our proposal, that they don't like it. And they say in the what they write that, yes, everything okay, we agree with the fact that you have more power, but at the end of the day they told us, okay, but if you want to have more power, you need to do like us. Sheesh, I will say. Let's do all that. But it includes budget question, it includes time, it includes a lot of things that may be difficult to handle. But I really think that the board member who say plus one and what Chris says will think about what is the level of responsibility, how we organize. Is a single member of this organization need to have the same level of opening what they do, how they do the things? I really don't think so. What we are looking, it's a community power. It's not the individual people in this taking into account what they think or they are doing. Yes, ding, ding. My point is I would like to come back to what I write at the first comment period. We need to be sure that in every organization we have multiple candidates. We have good election process. We have a possibility of choice, and the diversity is important. And there are a lot of things that we need to handle in this review of the SO and ACs, but it could be handled in the normal review, adding those points in those AC and ASO reviews. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. And I'm going to close the queue after Cavus, but let's hear Jonathan first.
At the risk of saying the same thing again in a different way, the comments again point to a stark contrast. Whatever criticisms we have of the community and its accountability are equally applicable to its policy development processes now as they would be to accountability processes in the future. So if, in fact, the multi-stakeholder model itself is flawed, we have a much bigger problem in front of us, because every single decision made by the community is called into question because of this risk of capture and other issues that have been raised. And so the only difference is that under the current system, the board can exercise a paternalistic power to override what it might perceive as a biased outcome, a captured outcome, et cetera. There, the balance on the community's inability to find true consensus, true representation of the community, that there is an underlying assumption there. And so the question we need to, again, ask ourselves is where do we see the greater danger in too much power in the hands of the community or too much power in the hands of the board? That is really the question that we are all avoiding asking, but I think it's really what we're all discussing in an indirect way.
Thanks, Jonathan. And I will respond to that or try to respond to that after we heard Cavus, please.
Thomas, it's good that you want to make a list of the available options to be further pursued tomorrow. I would like to come back to the issue that we recognize that we have a problem, but we don't want to address the problem. The problem is in the summary of the ICANN input in page two, fourth bullet, referring to the potential risk of the change or shift of the balance between the different multi-stakeholder. And in paragraph two, specifically, they refer shift of the balance between the government and private sectors. I understand this shift of balance mentioned by ICANN stems from the voting. Wouldn't it be possible that you put in the list that you're preparing that in order to empower the community, we make every possible effort not directly to refer to the voting approach? We could refer to the consensus without specifying whether it is a full consensus or qualified consensus and so on and so forth. Could you kindly list that one as one possible option for further discussion to avoid voting? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavus. And with that, we've come to the end of the queue. We've not come to the end of the session. We got word from Fadi that drinks will be here around 7, so we... Before? Okay. We shouldn't have said that because now people are going to get distracted because they want booze. But let's try to take stock, and then, you know, we have a few more minutes. I will hand over to Leon afterwards. But I think what became clear now is that we have another aspect which we have agreement on, and that is enhanced SOAC accountability is needed. What we're going to do between today and tomorrow is we're going to take the points that you made, list them, and provide you with that list of accountability measures that could be taken. Jonathan Zook is perfectly correct in asking the question, you know, who shall ultimately hold the power? But I think that we agreed earlier, at least I didn't hear any objection, that we need to have mutual accountability either way in order to make ICANN better. And so we are going to provide you with that list, and we will confirm tomorrow whether we can reach agreement on the items on that list. Maybe these are things that everybody is in agreement on, and then why not have SOAC accountability improved regardless of what model we ultimately apply? But another purpose of this exercise was to look at the concerns that we heard from the community. And looking at the list of items that we captured this morning, degree of experience of community preparedness to take on a new role. SOAC accountability is a preparatory measure for that, according to the board. How to ensure SOAC accountability? That's what we're just discussing. How should community decisions be made? We're going to think about that a little bit more with maybe a hybrid thing between voting and consensus building. And we have another few points that we made progress on. So there was the fear of statutory powers and how that could lead to unintended side effects. We heard Holly and Rosemary speaking to that we can limit, if not eliminate, that unintended side effect. So I guess the board will talk to Jones Day and see whether we can reach a joint legal understanding on these unintended side effects. So we will reconvene tomorrow on these points and see whether we can get more progress on the areas of consensus on that one or areas of agreement on that one. I see George's hand is up. I don't want to open up the queue again, but George, the floor is yours, and after that I'm going to hand over to to Leon.
Thank you. I liked Jonathan Zook's appraisal of the situation, except to say that I don't know whether this is a binary choice, whether we're on top or you're on top. Is there? I don't think we have discussed the issue of solutions that cause a balance of power or balance of control, and I wouldn't want to write that off. And we have, for example, in the U.S. government, we have a situation somewhat like that, although based upon its recent performance, I'm not sure I'd recommend it as a model. But surely there are other possibilities, and I think it's worth exploring them. Thank you.
Thanks, George. So thanks, everyone, for a very fruitful discussion, I thought. You know, this part was very interesting and enlightening. So we hope to be able to build on that first thing tomorrow morning. Leon.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Leon Sanchez. And while we wait for some drinks, I'd like to give a slight preview on what we will be addressing tomorrow morning. We will be, I mean, we're almost hitting the top of our agenda time today. So I would like to call for Steve to provide a preview on what we will be discussing on stress test section, so we can take this and sleep on it and prepare for a... Exactly. So, and we're going to do the same on human rights. So, Steve, if you could please give us a very quick preview.
Thank you, Leon. Tune in tomorrow for a full discussion of stress test public comments. But here's a quick preview. Four different categories. The first will be taking a look at capture or unintended consequences. We'll cover some of the stress test comments that came in on that. There were 20 in total comments on the tab there. And then stress test 21 about the revocation and reassignment of a CCTLD manager. Two more categories, numbers 29 and 30, which we covered extensively with Becky Burr's discussion of contract enforcement today. And then finally, the infamous and all-encompassing stress test 18. We'll see you tomorrow.
Stay tuned. Thank you very much for that, Steve. And on the human rights track, we're going to do something similar. And while we won't be diving deep into human rights this afternoon, this evening, I can tell you that we've been working on Working Party 4 in trying to define the wording that we would be proposing to be included in the bylaws, so that ICANN is committed to respecting human rights as we proposed in our proposal document. And so far we have had many discussions around the two proposals that we set in our proposal document. We are going through them. We are also trying to provide a rationale and an explanatory note that will help anyone reading the proposed bylaw amendment in human rights to interpret it in a way that won't be misleading, of course. So in the public comments, we found that most of the comments support the inclusion on some language on human rights, but regardless of that, we have seven comments that consider that this is something premature to be included into our work, and they are proposing that we take care of this as part of Workstream 2. So we will be discussing all of this tomorrow. We will be showing you, of course, a preview of how this amended bylaw could look. This is not a final version. This is a work in progress, and we would like to build it in a collaborative way with you. So stay tuned. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the evening.
And before you all leave, there have been some in the room who said that we should make better use of our time and the resources. And it's not like we're immune against such criticism. So we'd rather like to make use of that brain power. And we're going to have a debrief session tonight. Do we have the room and the time, Alice? Lisetta at 7:30. So those who have ideas, those who want to play a more active role in ensuring that we do make the best of everybody's time, please do come join the debrief session, and we will make sure that your views are heard and that we can take your thoughts on board. With that, I'd like to thank everyone. Lizetta. Thanks, everyone. See you at the bar.